chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Elise Mitchell on the show today. Elise is a three-time CEO, leadership strategist, author, keynote speaker, executive coach, and advises clients through her own consultancy, elisemitchell.com. Elise, I have been looking so forward to this. I am so excited that we were able to make this happen. You're in Nashville. I'm in St. Louis, but thank goodness through technology, we can do a remote podcast. And I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. We can indeed. I always feel so connected to you, even though we don't get to be in person.
Right. So Elise and I, we know each other through a spiritual leadership institute, through CEO Forum, the female version of that, I guess, a female class. And what's so funny about it is I am supposed to be Elise's mentor. And so we have monthly calls, but I am telling you what, she mentors me more than I mentor her. So it has just been such a fun time getting to know you. And there is so much wisdom and so much knowledge packed into you, Elise. And I cannot wait for our listeners to get to experience Elise Mitchell.
Thank you. Well, we help each other, Lisa. That is for sure.
So I want to dig right in because we've got so much I want to talk about. And I know you were the youngest, right, of three? Were you the little sister?
Yes.
So you had two older brothers.
Two older brothers, yeah, who all threw me out of their bedrooms and locked me out of the house and all the things that older brothers do.
That is probably where you learned a lot of your early leadership lessons, I'm thinking. You tell the story about you guys traveled a lot, like as a family when you were younger, and your parents had a green station wagon and you would sit in the cargo hold behind your brothers and your job was to hand out the snacks and the sandwiches.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town in Illinois. So St. Louis was my big city. Go Cardinals. And we used to drive. My father was from California. So we would drive across the country to California to see those grandparents and spend a week or two with them. And so that's another thing, being the baby and the only girl, I was sent to the back of the cargo hold. That was before seatbelts were a thing. And I was back there with the Coleman cooler. And my mom and I would load up the cooler with sandwich makings and snacks and things like that. So whenever my brothers or my folks were hungry, that was my assignment, was to hand out the snacks. Yeah. But the view from the cargo hold, though, I'll tell you, the windows were pretty. I had a three-way view out the back, you know.
Well, and I know you loved to travel. You loved the journey. I mean, that was fun for you doing that, right? And you have lots of great memories. You graduated from ACU, from Abilene Christian University. You've got really a great pedigree in terms of your education. I know you did some executive work at Harvard and Dartmouth. I think you graduated about the same time that I did from college.
Yep.
But about 10 years, 12 years later, you founded your first company, right?
That's right. And I often tell young entrepreneurs who think they want to start a company right out of school, well, you can, you'd be way ahead of me. I had to work in my field. My field was public relations. So I worked for a number of ad agencies and PR firms, both in Memphis and Nashville. And I also worked in corporate life for a number of years in Memphis and loved all of it. And so it was about 13 years in before I started my own firm. And we actually moved to Arkansas at that time, to Northwest Arkansas. Fayetteville is where we went to go build our lives after my husband was out of his educational training in Memphis.
Right. And I want to dig into that because I know you guys spent, you know, the growing up years of your kids and that in Arkansas. But, you know, one of your first leadership jobs, I believe, Elise, was you led the PR department at Embassy Suites. You said, really, that was your first leadership experience. And I love what you talk about. You say, instead of going into the group and saying, here's what you're doing wrong and here's how you really do PR, you went on a listening tour.
I did, which of course that was but what I spent my first 2 weeks doing, because the night before I took that job on, Lisa, oh my goodness, I was, you know, running back and forth to the bathroom thinking I was going to throw up. And I thought, oh, this is just great. I've got the flu right before I start this big new job. And then I thought, oh, Elise, who are you kidding? You are so nervous. You're scared to death. And I thought, how am I going to step up to something this big and not screw it up? You know, sort of the imposter syndrome idea of what they got to figure out, uh-oh, we hired the wrong person. And so I thought, well, you know what? I just need to go in and I need to go and talk to all of the different leaders in the company and figure out, well, what has PR done in the past? And more importantly, what could we be doing to support their part of the business of the future? And I learned so much by just going in and asking questions and listening and taking notes. And pretty soon I thought, you know what? I think I can really help these people. And that kind of gave me the confidence I needed to try to bring my knowledge and expertise and then just to learn as you go that I would be able to make a difference.
I just think that's such a great leadership lesson though. You don't have to go in. Nobody really expects you to have all the answers when you go in. So just try to learn as much as you can. And I have told you before, I've quoted you in social media posts. You're wonderful at asking thought-provoking questions. And the question that you ask, which I just love, and I think it's a great question that we can even ask our teams as established organizations, right? What can I do for you? That was the question that you asked. And I just think that is such a very simple, but very important question.
It is. It's a great one to always ask, to just say, what can I do for you? And to be sincere in offering your help. I learned that also later in life when I had a very influential person, a man that I met, who after visiting with him for some period of time, he said, what can I do for you? And of course, what's our first reaction? Say, oh, no, nothing. You know, like I wouldn't want to put you out by asking for something. And he said, will you let me know, you know, if there's something? And I sat there a minute and I thought, what, Lisa, are you crazy? This person has power and influence and connections. And I thought to myself, there's actually somebody I really want to meet that he knows very well, who is a business partner of his. And I said, I thought of something you could do for me if you really meant it. He said, well, of course I meant it. What? I said, could you introduce me to this person? And he said, consider it done. And the funny thing was, this person that I met was also quite influential. We ended up becoming sort of lifelong friends. He was a fellow entrepreneur in another space, but we helped each other a lot through many, many years of working and building our companies together. And I'll always be grateful for that. So I guess my advice there is ask the question. And then if somebody asks you, think of something that they could do for you. Something simple, like maybe just make an introduction or offer a piece of advice. There's some tremendous joy in being able to do for others too, that makes you feel really good.
Right. And not allowing them to do that is going to keep them from a blessing.
Very true.
You know, I love your book, Leading Through the Turn. And we're going to talk a lot about that.
Thank you.
But when you are even giving your acknowledgments, I love how you say, finally, I'm thankful to God for giving me a relentless drive to achieve the unlikely talents beyond what I deserve, unexpected opportunities to use them, and for calling me to give all the good stuff away. Mm. The higher calling of leadership. May I reach this destination. And I put in here, Elise has an abundance mindset. So sometimes people gain knowledge, even in organizations, you see that sometimes people will gain the knowledge, but they don't really want to share it because then they feel like, oh, I'm giving my power away. But you're a go-giver because there have been so many times when I'm talking to you about something, you go, oh, I've got a paper on that. I've got something I'm going to send you that I know is going to bless you or whatever. And you just freely share. And so I feel like that is a very, very good lesson for people. When you have that abundance mindset, it's so much better than the scarcity mindset.
No kidding. Covey knew what he was talking about when he came up with that principle. But I do really believe it because this is the idea of sort of establishing reciprocity with others. You know, like, how could I create benefit for you? And just in your heart and your mind, know that it will come back to me someday. Maybe not today, but there may be a time, which of course I know people like you in my life who are great mentors to me, and you're such a giver to me. There'll be times when I need you so badly. Lisa is the one to help me. And I want to have built up the trust and the goodwill with you in demonstrating that I'm willing to give so that when I really need you by my side for something, then you are freely giving back to me. So you just have to give and trust that it'll come back to you in the future.
Right. Yeah. When you have somebody like that in your life, when you know that they are freely giving you, they've got abundance mindset, the word that you said, Elise, is so true. It builds trust. I can trust this person. This person has my best interest at heart. So I want you to talk a little bit, like maybe one of our listeners is out there and they're considering taking on a new role. In fact, I know I've got people in my life right now that have just reached out to me yesterday and said, I'm thinking about doing something different. Can we talk? So you're taking on a new role, or possibly you're taking on an expansion of responsibility in the current organization that you're in. You've got like four things that you talk about, and I'd love for you just to touch on each one of these, if you would, Elise. So the first thing, and you've already kind of mentioned it, you said, accept that fear is a natural part of stepping up.
And I think part of that is, this is often what holds us back, this idea of the imposter syndrome, and like, I'm not cut out for this job, or what if they figure out that I'm a fraud, you know? A lot of that sort of insecurity, that's very normal, I'll say that, if you're listening and you think that's me say, yeah, well, welcome to the human race. And the reason is because our brains don't like uncertainty. We like a sure thing as much as we can have it. But of course, how much of life is really a sure thing? Not much. But we fool ourselves into thinking things can be a sure thing. So we say, can I do this job? And what I want to challenge you to push back to say is, hey, if I'm not a little bit afraid, I'm not really stepping up. I'm not really stretching myself. Yeah, if it's a comfortable fit, chances are I'm going to be bored 6 months in. Like, it's maybe not a big enough step up for me. I should be a little afraid to take it on.
That's great advice. So don't be afraid to be fearful.
Yeah, say, oh, okay, that means I'm stepping up. Ooh, this is going to be, I always say, rub your hands together and say, this is going to be an exciting adventure. And I've got to learn so much.
Yes, and that brings me to the second one, which you know I love, is have a learner's mindset. You said you have to have a healthy dose of humility and an open mind.
Well, and that's part of the nobody knows everything, because if we try to tell ourselves, well, I will wait until I'm A, not afraid, B, till I know everything I need to know, then you're not ever going to step up. Everything is going to pass you by. Somebody else will step into that opportunity and the window will close for you to have taken that opportunity. So you need to step into the moment when it happens and not only tell yourself it's going to be a great adventure, but to say, I'm going to learn so much. And what am I going to learn? And have the confidence to know that you are going to bring life experiences, professional experiences, expertise, knowledge, skill. You're going to bring all of that to the position that will inform it really quickly. So even from day one, day two, day three, you're going to start to go, hey, you know what? I think I might be able to make a difference here. And you'll begin to get your courage up. But the key there is to say, I don't have to know everything. I am smart enough to figure it out as I go if I'm willing to learn.
Absolutely. And you have a great quote. I told you this is an Elise-ism that you'll probably see in a social media post at some point. But I love this quote. Being a quick learner will give you a running start, but being a lifelong learner will take you over the finish line.
Yeah, and so true.
Beautiful. So good. So what about the established reciprocity?
So that's the idea of, you know, what can I do for you? Go in and be sure that people know I'm here to help. And you sincerely are, because chances are you can begin to spot a lot of ways that you can help others, but you want it to be their idea too. You don't want to walk in and say, boy, do you need my help? So if you ask them, what can I do to help you? And I tell you, I used to watch the faces of these executives. They would sort of look at me and go, oh, like they were kind of taken aback because nobody either had said that to them in a while or they didn't expect it from me. And when they saw that I was serious, then I actually had, just as I did with this gentleman I told you a minute ago, they would say, well, you know, there is something that you can do. And I remember the director of operations, he said to me, Lise, I think our people need to know what you know about persuasion and building trust and reputation. He said, would you come and speak at one of our sales meetings and present to them? I said, oh my gosh, I'd be honored to. And I came to find out that none of my predecessors had ever even been invited to that event. And so the idea of how do I pour into his people and help them by sharing what I know to complement their skills meant a great deal to him that I would be willing to do that. And of course, for me, it gave me visibility. It helped me build trusted relationships throughout the company. In my book, I mentioned two books that were really terrific, but one of them that you just referred to, Adam Grant's book, Give and Take. I had somebody, when he had first written that book, somebody sent that book to me and said, Elise, you're going to love this book. And I was like, oh, well, let me read it. And I was just starting to write mine. I read it. I thought it was fantastic. Talks about reciprocity. Really, it even talks much more about even beyond reciprocity. It's about giving without even expecting something in return. And of course, that's a very God-given quality for us to want to just help other people. But he talks about how that has benefited leaders over time. A lot of research behind that givers are the ones who are the most successful, not the takers, not surprisingly.
Absolutely. And then the last one is striving for early wins. And so go in because they're watching you, aren't they, in the first 90 days. So look for the low-hanging fruit. Look for the early wins. And you had a book there that you mentioned, The First 90 Days by Michael Watkins.
Yeah, that's a great field guide for any new job that you take on. And it teaches you all kinds of, you know, these are the first steps to take. This is how to get the early win. Even John Cotter, who is sort of the change management guru, I heard him speak at Harvard when I was there doing some educational experiences. He talks all about change management. And one of the things he talks about in the classic 8-step process for leading and driving change is to get the early wins. Because why? It builds your confidence and it builds confidence in your people that they are on the right path. And if they stay the course, eventually you will achieve the win.
Absolutely. Very good. I tell you what, as you can tell, listeners, this is going to be a really rich podcast episode, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Elise Mitchell. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Elise, you left Embassy Suites. You and Ray moved to Arkansas and you started Mitchell Communications, I believe, was it 1995?
Yes, right in the mid-90s.
And, you know, you won't say this, but I'm going to say it. So many accolades, crazy success that you had. But Tell us a little bit about the journey at Mitchell.
Well, I didn't want to go to Arkansas. You know, that was one of my lessons in my book of what I call scrap the map, which is you just have to go with the detours in life. You could end up in some really terrific destinations if you do. And so moving to Northwest Arkansas actually turned out to be an amazing experience. It was a fantastic place to live, to work, to raise a family, and to build a company. So I started Mitchell Communications Group at that time. It was a public relations and marketing communications firm. We quickly acquired Walmart, Tyson, and J.B. Hunt, the big three that live in that corner of the world. Their headquarters are all there. We were very fortunate to earn them as our clients. And we had slow but steady growth over the first 10 years or so. But then about the mid-2000s, something happened and we really started to take off. Our growth really started to go. In fact, it's really kind of started about 2008, believe it or not, which was, of course, when the recession hit. Crazy enough, hard to believe, that was the beginning of a five-year period of rapid growth for us. We grew over 500% over the next 5 years. And all kinds of reasons why, primarily because I had such a fantastic team and we had such incredible clients. We were doing a lot of national and international work for those three and many others. And I became obsessed with work. I became singularly focused on building that company. And I often say it's my third child in my family. You know, I have a son and a daughter who I could spend a whole hour talking to you about. I'm so proud of them. Love them. But Mitchell Communications Group was like a third child. I nurtured it, cared for it, fed it, stood between it and trouble. It's 24/7. I just loved it. So it was, the experience of entrepreneurship was great. But there was something that was happening. On the outside, everything was really terrific. And on the inside, everything was falling apart. My marriage, my parenting skills, my physical health, I had stopped all exercise. My mental, my spiritual health was depleting down to virtually nothing. And it wasn't that I wasn't doing sort of the externals of like trying to keep all that up, but it wasn't really working because all I thought about was winning at work. And at some point, I kind of had a breakdown, so to speak. I just lost my temper to my people and kind of pounded my fist on the table. We were actually in a restaurant. I kind of made a scene. I was so mad because why? Because my team wasn't living up to my expectations of what the work needed to be and the quality. And I had fooled myself into thinking these unrealistically high expectations were the norm. And the team was just kind of like, you know what? We just don't think we can do this anymore. And I came home that evening to have dinner with my family. And my husband sat me down at the kitchen table. I remember this as if it was yesterday. And he said, I got a call from work. I said, you did? He said, yes, they're really worried about you. And I was like, oh my goodness, what did they say? And he said, they told me what happened today. Elise, we all are wondering, where did you go? Who is this person that's in front of us now? We don't even recognize you. Something's got to change. And the funny thing was, Lisa, I sat there and listened to him and I did not argue with him one bit because I knew he was right. And I said to him, Ray, I know things need to change, but I don't know how. I don't know what to change. What do I do differently? And that was when he said, you know, we haven't been on a vacation together in like 10 years, just the two of us. Let's go on a trip. And if you know, you plan a trip with somebody that you love, it's actually more of a negotiation than anything else. And we finally agreed in a moment of insanity. I agreed to get on the back of his motorcycle and take a 10-day trip through the Alps. We were going to Europe and he'd never been to Europe. And the only way he would agree to go is if we did it on a motorcycle. So I thought, this is going to be awful. I'm uncomfortable. I'm not going to like this. What happens if it rains? Your hair looks bad the whole time because you're wearing a helmet. You know, you can't even see, you know, the view from the back can't be that great, which I guess it was a little bit like the view from the cargo hold in that green station wagon. But I will tell you, Lisa, I got on the back of his bike and I never looked back. I was hooked on motorcycling. And most importantly, on that 10-day trip, I rediscovered the joy in the journey. Because I realized that I had spent so much time trying to get to there, wherever there was, it was never enough. We would achieve a goal and I'd say, okay, what's the next goal? And the next and the next and the next. And it just, that's back to the sort of driven, obsessed kind of superwoman syndrome you have in your head. And I knew that's no way to live, because guess what? It's not a sustainable way to live and lead your life. You have to slow down and enjoy the ride and make the journey matter as much as the destination. And that's what I learned.
Well, you were kind of addicted to achievement.
I really was.
And we know people that you can get very myopic in your focus, and then you leave a wake of destruction behind. Yeah. You know, if you're a listener and this is resonating with you right now, do something about it before you crash and burn, because you will. It's not sustainable. Elise, you're talking about moving to Arkansas. I remember something that I read in your book where you were so upset about that. You did not want to move to Arkansas. You sat in the driveway in a lawn chair for 3 days so you didn't have to talk to Ray.
Right, I did.
But, you know, again, it was an unexpected blessing, because that's where your company was born.
That's right. And I always say, at those moments in time when you don't want to go on that detour in life, you know, we're all on detours in life. So you stop and say, am I bitter about it? Or am I going to let this change make me better? So bitter or better, it's your choice. And it's all up here. It's all in your head. You get to reframe how you think about this change in your life to say, you know what? This is going to be an amazing and exciting adventure. And I'm going to learn so much. That's back to that learner's mindset and not being afraid, but to say, this is going to be a great adventure. Let's just go and see where God is going to lead me on this part of my journey. It might be someplace really quite amazing.
So I know you not only got on the back of Ray's motorcycle, but you ended up loving to motorcycle yourself. And even in your book, there's a picture of you, and you are like just one hot mama. With your leather chaps. But talk about learning to ride the motorcycle and what you were taught.
Well, when I came back from that trip, Ray said, you were meant to ride. I said, oh, no. I'm real happy being on the back of your bike. He said, no, you were meant to ride. So I took the motorcycle safety course, which I always advise people, definitely do that. You get your certification and you get your driver's license listed there that you are certified to ride a motorcycle. And you learn so much. And I remember on the Friday night sitting in a motorcycle dealership in the class, and we had Big Mike as our instructor, who had the black leather vest and the tattoos on his arms, just like you would imagine. Big Mike was there to teach us a lot. He was very knowledgeable. One thing he said, though, in the middle of that evening in that class that has never left me, an intersection is the most dangerous place you can be on a motorcycle for obvious reasons, but a turn is the next most dangerous place. And the reason is because in a turn in the road is where a lot of the hazards gather, like gravel, oil slicks, sometimes there's potholes, even just the trajectory of the turn itself, you could guess wrong and either end up in a ditch or in worse yet, in the oncoming lane. So turns are hazardous. And he said, I'm going to teach you how to navigate a turn safely. He said, as you approach a turn, you look into it, you spot the hazards that are there, you make a plan to adjust. But he said, you keep your eyes focused at the end of the turn. It's called looking through the turn. And the reason it works is because your bike follows your eyes. So if you stare straight into the turn or the hazards right there, there's actually a name for that. It's called target fixation. You'll drive right into that pothole or drive right into the gravel there, what made your bike slide. He said, keep your eyes focused on where you want to end up. It's called looking through the turn. And I sat there and I thought, oh my goodness, that is the greatest metaphor for business and life I've ever heard. How do I be a leader who looks and leads through the turn and never lose sight of where I want to go, but always still making a plan for whatever is going to happen right in front of me? It sounded like a great challenge, but something that appealed to me, which is the idea of looking ahead, keeping your eyes looking down the road so you're never totally tripped up by what's happening right in front of you.
That's why it's good to have hobbies, I think, and other things that you do outside of your business, whether it's gardening or farming or motorcycling, whatever it is, because you can learn, there's leadership lessons all around us, you know, if we will just take the time to stop and listen and learn. I feel like, too, that that's such a great metaphor for where we are right now. It's hard to look through the turn we're in this global pandemic right now. And I know so many leaders are struggling to say, I don't even know what's going to happen. You know, we don't have a crystal ball. So what would you say to them right now?
So now, after I actually sold my business after a number of years and had a fantastic experience working with our global parent company for about 7 years, but knew in my heart that I had one more part of my journey. So a few years ago, I started what I do now, my consulting work. So I do executive coaching, I do leadership development, business consulting, and I absolutely love it, Lisa. This is just the way that God is using me now, is to help high-performing leaders achieve more. That's what my focus is now. So I'm very privileged to work with CEOs, COOs, CFOs. I mean, just on and on and on. I'm just amazed at the quality of clients. They're so accomplished. But yet one of the things I've learned is it doesn't matter what your title is. We're all human. We all need a confidant. We need a sounding board. We need good outside advice, you know, to give us perspective. And to your point, I've actually gotten a whole lot busier since March, because I think a lot of really smart leaders are saying, hey, I need some outside perspective. I need some tools. I need a different way of thinking outside myself, which is very useful to think outside yourself and get new ideas to say, what can I do to rise to my best self in this moment? And there's one question that I have been working with my clients since early on to say, you know, this too shall pass. But I want you to focus and say, a year from now, looking back on this time, how do you want to say that you showed up as a leader right now? And I tell them, just pick three words, just three words that would describe the best version of you. And then keep that sticky note by your computer every day and say, today, I want to try to live up to those words. And if each day you keep that present focus in your mind, day by day by day, you have a really good shot at living up to that aspirational version of yourself and having the courage to make the tough decisions and to provide confidence and vision to your people when they really need it most right now.
Such great advice. Well, Elise, this is something extra. So what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
So my big mistake was being a destination leader only. I had forgotten how to find joy in the journey. So the something extra is to make the journey matter as much as the destination. And, you know, it's kind of funny, Lisa, for a while there, I beat myself up saying, oh my goodness, like I'm so destination focused. There must be something wrong with that. And I thought, no, there's not anything wrong with that. That's a great thing, right? But here's the key. I need to be that, right? That's how entrepreneurs build successful companies. They're very driven. They're very destination oriented, very results focused. But here's the key. I learned how to be a destination leader with a journey mindset. So that's right back to what you said, is I wanted to live a whole life. I didn't want my company to be all that defined me. That's not why my husband married me. It's not the relationship that you have, your children have with you, is because you are this great leader. They build relationship and love you and trust you, and you attract other people to you when you're a whole person and you lean into the different parts of your life. Work, yes, absolutely. Lean into it when it calls you and needs you, but be willing to listen to hear the voices of the other people in your life who say, hey, what about me? I want a little attention. And that includes yourself. You got to have that me time for hobbies and personal interests and investing and developing yourself.
Absolutely. Well, Elise, now we've already kind of talked about what you're doing today, but tell the people again, the title of your book. Go to Amazon. You can get it on your Kindle or you can buy a hard copy of it. Also tell them about what's coming up for you that's really exciting that maybe they can get involved in.
Thank you, Lisa. So the book is called Leading Through the Turn. So listeners can find me at elisemitchell.com. Really simple. My name, elisemitchell.com. I have coming up this fall a leadership academy, which is something that I launched back in the early days of the lockdown. So we've been through two cohorts. We had a spring cohort and a summer cohort. We're going to have a fall cohort. It's an online virtual leadership academy for 6 weeks every Tuesday at lunch. And you can go to thinkbiggerleadbetter.com. That's our landing page. And you can find out more there. You can register for the fall class. We'd love to have your listeners.
I can guarantee you that you will come away from there a better leader, lots of great ideas, and have a ton of fun doing it.
Yeah, we have a great time.
Well, Elise, this has just been such a joy. It truly has been. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. I am so excited for our listeners to hear from you. And thanks again.
And thank you for all you do for me, my dear friend, and for all you do for everybody. You're really something extra to all of us.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.